Okay, now when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, like I've been saying, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody out there that's happening to be listening to this radio show. And this radio show is Blood River Radio. My name is Eddie Miller. Some people call me the Bombardier. Some people call me the SOB. They really do. I kind of like that name better than all the rest of them, because I think of four-star general. Joseph Stilwell. They call him Vinegar Joe because his personality was so crappy. But he made it to the top in the Army. He was in the Burma Triangle in that Burma Theater during World War II. Anyway, folks, that's one of my famous rabbit trails that went down today. The date is April 28th in the year of our Lord 2020. And like I said, you were listening to Blood River Radio. And you know what? The 20th of this month was Hitler's birthday. And it was just a coincidence. A lot of people probably say we started the series that we're on now on Hitler's birthday. We really did. It was just a coincidence. But we're getting ready to give you an outline in just a minute, folks. But before we do that, I'm going to do my best to say a prayer. So if you will, just hang on. I'm not a minister. And I'm not the best at praying. I am a hardcore Christian, but some of us, I'm kind of like, who was this? Moses, you know, Moses couldn't speak. You know, Moses had a speech impediment. Aaron did most of his talking for him. So anyway, I need me an Aaron around here somewhere. Anyway, people, if you will, just bow your head for a minute. Oh, Lord, I'm coming to you in prayer. And which Lord am I talking about? I'm talking about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Eddie Miller, the God of Blood River Radio, the God of Liberty News Radio. That's who we're talking about. Oh, Lord, we're coming to you in humble prayer. I ask you to please overlook all my faults, all my shortcomings. Forgive me for all my sins I've committed this day, O Lord. If you will, Lord, bless this radio station. Bless me and my family. Bless Sam and his family. Bless all the Liberty News Radio family. All the people that are listening to us, bless y'all people. Bless all these people out there, O Lord. Lord, I'd also like to pray for all of our political prisoners. Specifically, I guess our poster children for the political prisoners would be Daniel Borden, Jacob Goodman, Steve Stockman. They're all unduly incarcerated, Lord. I pray for them, Lord. Please give them strength. Give everybody a strength, Lord, that I've mentioned, Lord. And please, God, give me the strength and the wisdom to use this show like you want it to be used. Correct all my mistakes. Tell me what to say, Lord. Tell me if where I'm wrong, God, convict me. If I'm wrong, Lord, if I intentionally lead these people in this audience down the path to hell, Lord, I hope you strike me dead. I'm going to do the best I can do. And that's all this in Jesus' name, amen. People, I'm going to give you a short outline. Next week, well, let me get this back in order. Last week, we started. When I say we, I said Monica Schaefer and Berta Voss. Berta Voss being the journalism. She's got extreme amount of courage because she's taking a dangerous risk over there doing this Holocaust series. We started our Holocaust series last week. Pardon this little hack. I have this little cardiac arrhythmia going on. Now, even though I can still run marathons, but every time my heart misses a beat, it causes a hack, causes you a hack. I'm hoping I can get that straightened out pretty soon. Lord knows, I don't know how many more tests they can take. This is another aside, but I'll tell you what's been going on with me. I've been living at the VA hospital in the cardiac unit. I've had radioactive enzymes injected in my arteries, and then I had to do a treadmill test. I passed that with flying colors. Then I also had a echocardiogram. and passed that with flying colors. It was really strange. If you have an echocardiogram, you can see just how thin and fragile life is. I'm sitting there watching my heartbeat, watching the valves open and shut, watching the blood flow. And I'm sitting there thinking the whole time, you know, Lord, if one of those valves was to shut and not open, I'd be dead within 30 to 40 seconds. Anyway, that's what's been going on with me. But I'm continuing, though. I'm just telling Sam I've signed up for my fifth New York Marathon. I'm going to be running as a St. Jude hero and or for this new foundation I'm running for that does cancer research. But I'll be begging y'all people for some donations before too long for that. Anyway, tonight, we're going, like I said, we started our series last week on the Holocaust. And next week, the girls are going to be off. We way wound up the show tonight on the Holocaust, but we're going to take as long as it takes. Next week, as you well know, next Saturday will be May the 2nd, and that's the first Saturday of the month. So that will be League of the South month. Generally, normally, the League of the South will come on the second hour. So instead of bringing the girls on 1 hour, they're going to need more time there. So we'll probably let them take off and probably bring them back on the 9th if need be. But we'll probably wrap that up in another week or so at the max. But as you like I was telling you, people, to give you a quick preview of what this Holocaust is about, you probably hadn't heard me say this, but I cannot believe I'm actually doing this. You know, for years and years, I wanted to go and expose some of the lies that are sacrosanct in our society. There is no greater lie that's ever been told by Satan than this so-called lie of the Holocaust. Miss Monica Schaefer said last week, were there camps in Germany and all over Europe and Russia? Yes, they were. But, you know, in every wartime situation, they have all kinds of camps. Even had them in here in the United States. I remember when my mother, when she was a teenager in Arkansas, they used German prisoners of war. And she made her and her sisters were just giddy over them because they were so good looking, she said. They were, you know, well built and athletic and all this stuff. And they worked, they made them work in the fields and they got money and all that stuff. But anyway, the so-called concentration camps and the death camps never, ever existed like they say. That is the Satan's lie. And before I lose track, if you go back and if you look at the First World War, the Second World War, the same people that told those lies that got us into the wars there, that got us into Germany, a war against our people in Germany, are the same people that perpetrated that lie of the Holocaust that we're going to finish destroying tonight. And you know what? They're the same people that were back in Jesus' day. They're the same people that when Pilate had Jesus before him, and he said, "What shall I do with this man?" And they said, "Crucify him." And he said, "Well, what about if we just do this? You know, each year we're allowed to turn loose a prisoner in the camp. What do you say we turn Jesus loose? Because, you know, I see no fault in him." And they said, "No, give us Barabbas." Barabbas was a thief and a liar and a murderer. But anyway, people, that's my siren song. So we're going to a break. We'll come back. We're going to bring the real heavy hitters. Be right back.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen, by a friend of Medjugorje. Whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, it ain't gonna happen. A book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen, by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled M-E-J.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Well, people, thank you for holding on. My little bit is over with for the night. I'll just be chiming in. Any comments I have or that I'd like to add, I always like to do it when we come back from the break. But who we have right now is going to be pretty much running this show on our Holocaust series is the one and only Monica Schaefer and the one and only Bertha Voss. I mean, they are just lions of courage. How are you doing tonight, Miss Bertha Voss?
I'm fine. How are you?
That's great. I'm just doing wonderful. I'm really excited to have you and Monica. Monica, how are you doing, young lady?
I just actually looking forward to this show.
You know what? Monica, we're going to have to... Monica, we're going to have to let you go just for a second because you're breaking up real bad. Bertha, go ahead and take over until Monica can get her phone line straightened out, dear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, we were closing down last Saturday with the point that the memoirs, for example, of Churchill or de Gaulle, never really mentioned these death camps during the war, and that it was not really a topic or very of their interest to do or anything for the Jews during the war. As far as I know, through my history class, that there were dissidents, you know, they were fleeing out of Germany into the United States, for example, and try to contact the authorities what bad things are happening now in the Third Reich, and they didn't get an ear for these things. And obviously when they're flying their attacks or with the bombers through East Germany and Poland, they must have seen something or should have seen something like they do, for example, today when they observe the surface, you know, they do this or did this in Iraq, for example, or and another point would be the rainforest in the Amazon. They can check how many trees are chopped off, for example. And yes, what I could read it, I think yesterday or even today, was that the Pope obviously because of the findings in the archives, knew about these death camps. And I'm asking myself, did he know this because he ordered it, or why did he know it, but people like Churchill or de Gaulle or other bigger politicians at that time were not mentioning it in their memoirs?
Exactly, Ms. Berta. You know, as we covered last week, we made mention that all these so-called concentration camps that were supposedly discovered by the Allies, they were behind Soviet lines. The Germans didn't have access to these so-called death camps. They were way behind, controlled by the Soviets.
During the Cold War, during the Cold War, so that we couldn't check on this or this. I was now thinking about during the war, but you were thinking about after the war. When did the Cold War start? 50s.
It started really soon, not long after the Second World War, but 1945, 1946. And, you know, it was planned. There's a fellow, a Dr. Ent, for our audience, if you would like to read about the Cold War, go and look and research the great work of the one and only Professor Anthony Sutton. He wrote volumes on the books. They were called The Best Enemy That Money Can Buy. He can tell you all about how, and this is kind of an aside, but our people need to know it, Professor Anthony Sutton was the best of the best. He described in his volumes, I mean many volumes, about how the United States started building up the Soviet Union in the early 30s when the Red Terror was in full swing. They also, built up Red China. But and they manufactured the Cold War was manufactured. But back to you, Miss Berta. I hope I didn't go off too much of a rabbit trail.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And now I hope Monica can come up again because she wanted to take a look at the trials in particular. And from my side, I always found it interesting how many believers, you know, who were really convinced that this was true, came back with empty-handed. I'm also a bit in the internet with alternative media, and one guy comes into my head is Max Egan, who also did a show about white people and the war against white people or the hatred and what he had to go through. And he was also somebody who went down this rabbit hole and came back with something completely different, which was quite interesting because we were also very convinced.
You know, Ms. Berta, you know,
if he is known to the audience, but this is how I come to this. And I think Monica mentioned that Mr. Leuchter, who was also an expert, who was going to Auschwitz during the 80s, that he also came back with a complete different result. Maybe you can...
Yes, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. You know, Miss Berta, this war on Germany didn't just start in the Second World War, the First World War, but I will say we covered this this fact that I'm going to tell you in previous shows. About in 1933, World Jewry, the World Jewish Committee, there was a full page article in newspapers around the world, and I had access to one. We a text I had. We had Gene Andrews on this show who mentioned, matter of fact, he read the newspaper article to us, and it's talked about how international jury declares war on Germany. This was in 1933, and this is going to lead up to the Nuremberg trials. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But, you know, they declared international war on Germany because, and I'm going to go off too much of a rabbit trail and we'll take too much of your time. But you see, when Adolf Hitler came to power, he kicked out the international Zionist Jewish bankers. And that's the worst thing you can do.
System of economy more autonomous. And I think even Churchill quoted this, or I've seen a quote of Churchill, that was the main problem of Adolf Hitler, that he refused this money system and wanted to build up his own. Or did this.
Exactly. And he did it. I would love to get an economics book and see the exact nuts and bolts and mechanics of how that system worked. We had another guest on the show previously that said it was based on a man's labor. Hitler said that real wealth was not gold, it was not silver. And he was right. Real wealth is based on labor, be it a man out digging coal in a coal mine, a man in a chemistry lab coming up with formulas on how to make a new, better rubber for new tires. But you're exactly right.
Manufacturing, engineering, the idea of how something.
Well, Miss Bertha, we have a break. People, you're listening to Miss Bertha Voss, and we're doing our series on the Holocaust. Maybe we can get Monica back on when we come back. Hold on, people. We'll be right back.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with John Hunt.
Unemployment around the United States near a 50-year low before the coronavirus struck will now surge to over 16% by September as the economy withers under the impact of the outbreak, according to the Congressional Budget Office. That would far exceed the hit to the labor market during the Great Recession when the jobless rate peaked at 10%. Unemployment likely will remain in double digits into the end of 2021. The CBO's forecast underscores the pandemic's devastating impact to the economy. The nation's gross domestic product, the total value of goods and services, is expected to plunge at an annualized rate of over 40% between April and June before rebounding the second half of next year. More than 26 million Americans have applied for unemployment benefits in a little more than a month. The nation's unemployment rate, now around 15%, could eventually approach 20%. This is USA Radio News.
When thinking about life insurance, my accident reinforced you never know what tomorrow might bring. That's why I reached out to AccuQuote. AccuQuote helps people find a life insurance policy that meets their needs. Since 1986, they've helped millions of folks save up to 60% on their life insurance by comparing the rates and features of dozens of top-rated life insurance products. A healthy 50-year-old non-smoker can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $45 a month. A 60-year-old under $120 a month. Longer or permanent terms are available. Even if you already own life insurance, you really need to check out my friends at AccuQuote. Don't worry about health issues. Remember, they help me. As a pastor, I'm concerned about your soul and helping you to make sure your family is taken care of. Life insurance is more affordable now than ever, so don't make them wish you'd made that call. 877-437-4781. Call now, 877-437-4781. 877-437-4781.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state.
No deaths have been reported in China for the 10th consecutive day. The country's National Health Commission also recorded just 12 new cases, 11 of which it said were brought in from overseas. The country has reported a total of 4,632 deaths and 82,816 total cases, but the total number of active cases is now below 1,000. As a result, officials have slowly started to loosen restrictions on local residents.
Dr. Stephen Hahn, the Food and Drug Administration Commissioner, announced during the White House Coronavirus Task Force briefing that the organization has now approved the first at-home COVID-19 test kit.
This is a test where, under certain circumstances with a doctor's supervision, a test can be mailed to a patient, and the patient can perform the self-swab and then mail it back and get the results after that time, all under the guidance of a licensed physician.
Hahn said the FDA has also approved 63 other tests. This is USA Radio News.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we're back. Please bear with us. We're trying to get Monica back. Hopefully we can. But we, like I was telling Sam during the break, during live radio, you have to be able to roll with the flow. But we do have Miss Bertha. Before we go back to Miss Bertha, I'm just going to make a quick comment to reiterate what I said earlier. Yes, the war against Germany started actually before the First World War. But I guess for our purposes, we're going to talk about prior to the Second World War with things like the so-called transfer agreement. And I'm just, I'll be brief here because I don't want to take up too much of Bertha's time. The transfer agreement.
I know
kind of a
transfer agreement, and that there was the
UN go ahead.
Agency. Mm-hmm. And
go ahead.
This was also during the war, and they were collecting, or were you know, young Jews could sign up here in Germany and go to Palestine. Or at that time it was called Palestine. And I'm also, a few years ago, I came across a rabbi who was also talking about these things. And he gave this example about Eichmann offering 1.5 million Jews to Ben Gurion, but he was not interested, or his guessing was, because he was an Orthodox Jew, that Palestine or Israel at that time, its foundation was a communist state, not an Orthodox state or a state relying on religion or the faith of God, so to say. And so he left these 1.5 million Jewish people who, in his opinion, were Orthodox Jews, so not communist or something of interest for this new state, and they were left behind in this war. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. He did not care about Orthodox Jews. He wanted his precious Zionist state. And before we go, I hear that Miss Monica's back, but before we go to Miss Monica, I'm going to make this comment. The Jews, once again, they stuck it to the Germans. Hitler made a deal with the Jews. He thought they would keep it. And he, you know, listen, he let them take all their goods, all their money. He even gave them a certain amount of goods and money so they could go to their precious Palestine to turn into precious Israel. And the Jews reneged on it and stuck it to Hitler and the Germans. But Miss Monica, are you there?
I certainly am. Can you hear me?
We lost you. We can hear you loud and clear. We were just talking about a few other things, but I'm going to shut up talking about the transfer agreement and stuff like that. But if Miss Bertha wants to finish the transfer agreement, that's fine. But you ladies take off and do as you planned. I know you have all kinds of facts and statistics, Miss Monica. So take off.
Did you want to finish your thought, Bertha? Otherwise, I'll commence.
I'm ready. No problem.
Okay, that's wonderful. I don't know what happened there. Maybe somebody is buggering the phones because they knew this was coming up, and it's very forbidden to talk about this subject of the Holocaust. I do not know. It might just be random coincidence with the weather. It's pouring rain here at the moment. But anyway, you know, I'm going to start out by saying this. These three big men during the World War II era, and everybody will recognize these names, Churchill, Eisenhower, and de Gaulle. He was the French commander, military guy. Now, they wrote memoirs after the war. Between 1948 and 1959, these three men wrote their war memoirs. And this totaled up to 7,061 pages of their war memoirs for these men. And in those memoirs, there was not one word about the gas chambers, not one word about extermination camps. Camps, yes, but not extermination, not gas chambers, nothing about gas chambers. Now, you would think that they would have written something about that because they would have known, you know, they had broken the code for listening in on radio, and plus there were lots of spies and whatnot. I mean, you would think that they would have written something about these gas chambers had they existed. So while that doesn't amount to direct evidence that these chambers did not exist, it is a pretty big, you know, circumstantial evidence bit. And today, we'd like to talk about evidence, non-evidence, as it were, and the trials and whatnot. I mean, last week we set up with a lot of background and context. And so we'll continue with more concrete things today. And that was something that I thought was very important to point out about these memoirs of three big men on the Allied side of the war, not one word about the gas chambers. Yeah, so I'll just start with that. And we're going to do a little recap about each of our experience with teachers, because I had a huge revelation last week after our show. That evening, it just came like a flash to me. You know, I've always said this to people since my awakening a few years ago. I've always said, you know, in school there was this teacher that said to us, the victors write the history books. The victors write the history books. And I always remembered that, but at the time I didn't really understand what it meant because I naively thought, you know, I was just this innocent little girl who thought, well, what does it matter who writes the history books? That, you know, whatever facts happened, A, B, C, D, E, that's what they will write, whoever writes it. I just thought it was very black and white, you know, and then much later I figured out that it wasn't just about choosing the font. Now, last Saturday after our show, that evening, this flash came to me. I suddenly realized and knew the teacher who said that to us was the one who was teaching us the curriculum about the Holocaust, about the shrunken heads, the soap, and the lampshades that supposedly those evil Nazis made out of the skin, the fat, the heads, the bodies of the Jews, essentially. So he was teaching us those things, and then he kept on saying, but, you know, the victors write the history books. The victors write the history books. So that's when it was that I learned that statement. Go ahead, Birte.
Well, when I was learning English, I also started reading English books. And one was Aldous Huxley with Brave New World. And there, I always remember this 8,000 repetitions makes a truth.
Yes.
And when I look back at well, how media is working, and yes, there is a lot of repetition, and yeah, the more they repeat it, the more it is true, and it's quite boring, you know, unnerving, at least for me. I don't know how other people receive this, but this is also something which is part of this, I guess. How to push through.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The
That's right.
I mean, the facts, so to say.
Yeah, repetition, you know, that it does. And, you know, on that note, I'd like to say that some quotes that are taken completely out of context, attributed to Hitler, for example, or Goering, or, you know, somebody that was associated with what the world has come to believe are the evil, quote unquote, Nazis. I don't like to use that word, but that's already a slander word. And that word was coined by a Jew, and it's, you know, National Socialist. But anyway, it's often attributed to Hitler that the something about the bigger the lie, the easier it is to fool the people and think that they say, well, he made the big lie. Well, it's no, he recognized it that others and, you know, Jews are lying and they make big lies, and then it is harder for people to understand that these are lies. Like he said this, he said, you know, it's easy for us to understand little lies because everybody in their lives, they tend to make little sort of, you know, white lies, like little omissions of truth or whatever. But nobody can really believe a big lie because they can't fathom making such a big lie themselves. So they cannot believe that there would be such a big lie as this 6 million story, you know? And so this is kind of twisted out of context when these truths are said about, you know, what Hitler said. But he was talking about the other. He was talking about the...
Monica, we have to go to a quick break, and we'll come right back. When we come back, I'll make a comment, and then we'll go right back to you. People, hold on to your seats. Be right back.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we are right back. And before we go back to our guest, I'm going to read some material that Brother Rich sent me last week. People, this is what Rich sent me. It said that something you need to know about the Nuremberg trials, their findings were rendered sacrosanct. Their findings were a requirement for a peace treaty and written into law. And, you know, after the war, even during the Nuremberg trials, these Jews, and this is true, I've read it, I've read this about myself with the Barnes Review, the Jews predominantly were the officers, the MPs there. They took over Germany after the war. And get this, they wrote all the laws, and they controlled the TV and the papers and the schools, and they promoted all the degeneracy that Hitler destroyed when he came to power. I don't know if you know this, people, or not, but during the 30s, Berlin was like equivalent to our San Francisco today. You know, the homosexual capital of the world, San Francisco is today. Hitler, when he came to power, he got rid of all that filth, all that perversion. Well, when the Jews came in at the end of World War II, they brought it right back in. And does that sound, you know, with perversion, homosexuality running wild, teaching, transgender LGBT stuff in our schools, does that sound familiar to any other place you know in the world? How about that? How about that, Monica?
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad, actually, that you brought up the Nuremberg trials, because that's the next thing that we wanted to talk about here. And as far as these perversions and whatnot, what is being pushed nowadays, and that would constitute a whole nother show, but oh my goodness, that agenda has been really, really pushed on our children, younger and younger, and you know, drag queens reading to little children in the libraries and whatnot. And now schools and libraries are closed for another, this is another insane lie about the coronavirus thing, what's going on there. It's an agenda, it's the Hegelian dialectic, you know, problem solution, or I don't quite have the three ingredients yet there, but that's a whole nother topic. But let's talk about the Nuremberg trials. And I wanted to read to the audience articles 19 and 21, or excerpts out of these. These were for these tribunals. Their rules, you could say, their, you know, articles, their rules of conduct. The tribunal shall not be bound by technical rules of evidence. That's in number 19. And in number 21, the tribunal shall not require proof of facts of common knowledge, but shall take judicial notice thereof. Now, I don't know if everybody got the full gist of that, but let me put it this way. They are basically saying you do not need evidence to prove something that they deem to be self-evident or something that is common knowledge. We don't need to show it and have evidence for it. So they are going to, they proclaimed that this Holocaust happened, and then they say you don't have to have evidence for it. That is the bar that they set at the Nuremberg trials. Now, couple that with the fact, the documented fact, that confessions were gotten by torture, absolutely the most heinous torture, testicle crushing. I mean, this is, it's just actually, it's hard to even breathe about it without, to talk about it and still be able to breathe is what I wanted to say there. Berta, did you want to come in there just to
comment? Yes, I would like to add that for me it also sounds a bit like the Stalinistic trials which happened before, you know, how Stalin got into power when he had his trials accusing the technical intelligence and the top of the army, how he got rid of people who could be dangerous for him. And this sounds a bit like also like this, because they were also accused of being anti-communist or counter-revolutionaries and yes, all kinds of all sorts of these crimes, and then were put into the gulag or even hanged right away.
Yes.
So this is
okay. Exactly, and when you say anti-communist, this Are you talking about the Stalin and in Russia? Because that was communism.
Before.
I mean,
this happened before. And when you are reading this, how the Nuremberg was held, it sounds to me similar. It's kind of same strategy.
More needs to be said about these the staff at Nuremberg during these trials. 75% of the staff were Jewish, and the torturers were Jewish. And four of the well-known torturer inquisitors, I'm going to name them because, you know, we can talk a lot of things, but need to name names. Harry Tone, William Pearl, A.H. Rosenfeld, and Shlomo Moral. Those were four of the well-known torture inquisitors. Now, are we just making this up? No. There were many, many people in high ranks, Americans, who spoke out against these and recognized these for what they were. This was, you know, the victors having some kind of a, you know, show trial over the vanquished, and even that was completely unprecedented. But they said, oh, it was unprecedented times because of the heinous crimes of the Nazis, and so they had to do unprecedented methods for unprecedented times, whereas then they forbid evidence because they say it's not needed. They just basically declare something happened, and they say we don't need evidence to support it. Then they torture these men to make confessions. And then they, you know, some were hung. Here's a little sidebar. It took all day to cremate the bodies of 11 of these main, the Nazis who were hung. All day to cremate 11 of them. Just think about these gas chambers at Auschwitz where supposedly 4 million were gassed. And I mean, there were even higher numbers given at one point. But anyway, even just that shows what a farce that is. But some of the names of people in America that spoke out against this, for example, Senator Taft, he condemned these trials. He said it was a high grade. Actually, this was Harlan Fisk Stone, the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, said he said the Nuremberg trials were a high grade lynching party. And Senator Taft also condemned the trials. And there were many more, and, you know, they would be high-ranking people, but then after they spoke out against these trials, they suddenly, you know, lost their high standing. Go ahead, sorry.
Ms. Monica, also, President Hoover has written volumes about that, but get this. My brother Rich just sent me in. This is very interesting. This guy named Vyshinsky, who presided over the Moscow show trials in 1937 that you referenced. He was also a judge at Nuremberg, sister. And get this, let me add this. While we're speaking about Nuremberg, the defendants at Nuremberg, you've already referenced, they were tortured to some extent. And get this, the original German documents were denied to the defense. They were only allowed translations or transcriptions provided by the prosecution. And you also said this, United States judges said they were afterwards ashamed of the conduct at these trials. And listen, I'm going to say this one more time. I got to read this again. Vyshinsky, this is incredible. The man, Vyshinsky, who presided over the Moscow show trials in 1937 under Uncle Joe Stalin, was a judge at Nuremberg, for God's sake, an arch communist. Back to you, Miss Berta.
Ah, that's interesting. So my perception was right, that there was something familiar. Okay. I was also coming across that the outcome was also archived and not accessible until 2007. Do you know what that was decided, and that you have a look into the archives about the Nuremberg trial. Is this right? So nobody in Germany could access these findings. Only, of course, I came across that.
Yeah, I don't know, Berthe, if I hadn't heard that. But Germany is still an occupied country. Germany does not have their own, it's not their own government. They never signed a peace treaty after World War II. It is still at war. It is still at war without people realizing that. And they're certainly not taught that in school. I'm sure you weren't taught that in school. or were you?
Nah, wait a minute. I had my old Prussian history teacher. He told us. But as you were...
Ladies, we're about to run out of time for this hour. We're getting ready to transfer to the second hour. I'd also like to say Charlottesville, for our people that have been in prison there, they probably had this Fashinsky guy up there because that was nothing but a crappy show trial up there. But girls, hang on. We're going to go right back. It's going to be kind of a long break because we're transitioning from the first hour to the second hour. So don't go anywhere, girls. We're going to take up where we left off. People, thank you for holding on. Go get you some coffee. Be right back.